Hello, this is Michael Meehan, editor at SearchWebServices.com, and today I'll be speaking with Judith Hurwitz. She's the co-author of the recently released Service-Oriented Architecture for Dummies, and she's also the president of consulting firm Hurwitz & Associates, which, as you could guess, spends no small amount of time dealing with service-oriented architecture. Good day, Judith. How are you?
I'm just great. How are you?
Oh, doing quite well. Excited to be talking to you about this. Well, why don't we dive right into it? First question. A lot of what you're talking about in the opening chapters of the book is basic engineering and design principles, the sort of stuff that guides pretty much how everything in the modern world gets built. How did IT shops allow themselves to get so far down the road with silos and stovepipes?
Well, I think it's a complicated question to answer, but in essence, if you just sort of strip it down to its basics, organizations had a task to do. They were charged by their organizations to build things, to get technology projects done, and they simply were running as fast as they could. Technology also at the time that many of these projects were started was immature, so they didn't really have the ability to map across stovepipes or doing some of the work that we now are beginning to understand is essential for the future.
And in the book, you say the very survival of business hinges on its ability to adapt its IT to meet ever-changing business challenges. That's a fairly stern warning. How immediate is the risk for businesses that don't embrace the principles encapsulated by SOA?
I think it's very serious, because if you look at business, what business does is you get a group of really smart visionaries. They go into a planning session. They come up with ideas that will help their organizations be able to react to a changing business situation. It may be new competitors, it may be the opportunity to merge with another company that will strengthen their ability to compete in markets. So then they do need technology systems that support these efforts. So they turn around, go to IT, and they say, okay, we got a new strategy, and by the way, we have to move fast. We have to be able to understand the opportunities to leverage our customer base across five different business units so that we can sell more of existing products to more people without building new products from scratch, which costs us money. We are going to merge with this other company, and we need to be able to hit the ground running immediately so that we are offering them products and services right away, and a lot of this is driven by technology systems. And a lot of these old systems that are stovepipe simply, anything can be done with time and money. The problem is to make some of these changes requires redevelopment, totally transforming existing technology, which does not allow companies to change and adapt quickly. So then people in the management team get very frustrated. They're wondering, with all the money I've spent on IT over the last 20 years, how come they can't meet a simple request? So what the business sees as a simple request could be a technology nightmare. So companies that begin to realize this transform their technology so that when the business says we need to move quickly because there's an opportunity we could grab and run with, the technology is designed in a way they say, sure, no problem, we can do that. We'll pull these services out, we'll link them together, we're ready to go.
You mentioned that SOA starts from the business services layer and works top down. That notion seems to infuriate many developers who, for obvious reasons, prefer a bottom-up approach. To a degree, does SOA represent an unavoidable civil war in the app dev shop, business alignment versus cowboy development?
No, actually it doesn't, because you actually have to do a combination of both. But if you start from a point where you're just reacting without thinking about where you're going and why you're doing something, no matter what field you're in, you're going to run into trouble. So you really have to look at it from both perspectives. I mean, you clearly can't say we're just going to plan for the next 5 years and hope that that something good happens. On the other hand, you can't just start from the bottoms up and code and hope that things will work out. So you need a combination of understanding what problem are we trying to solve? What is the business objective here? Starting with that, and at the same time, you also have to build up the skills and do pilots and start out from a technology development point of view at the same time. So you really need a combination of both approaches for this to work. So no, it's not really intended to start the range war. It's really intended to get these groups starting to work together with a common goal, which is transforming the business using emerging and very sophisticated technology to make it happen.
What for you is the most critical functionality you need in place for an effective SOA?
Well, I think, again, if you start from a process standpoint and what problems you're trying to solve, for example, what are the type of changes your organization is going through? What type of business are you in? Are you in, for example, let's say you're a company like UPS. So you're in the transportation business. You're also in, guaranteed receipt business. So it's really understanding what the business is and what the drivers are, and then you can say, oh, okay, so what I need to do here is I need to really be able to take my existing services that are very well defined and create them in a way that I can link the right ones together. So it may be as simple as encapsulating key services that are nicely defined so that they can be reused in lots of different situations. So it may be something as concrete as discovering what components are there, using a technique that allows you to wrap them and make them usable in a lot of different situations. And maybe you need a abstraction of messaging, which might be an enterprise service bus. The issue is there isn't any, one right answer for everybody. It really does start with, what is your objective? What are you trying to do here? And a big part of this is sort of this assessment role. What do I have? What is my starting point? How good are my components that I'm dealing with? So that's a very important point is sort of that discovery and assessment that needs to be done fairly early on.
What's fundamentally different about the service lifecycle from the application lifecycle?
Well, typically in the application lifecycle, a developer is reacting to a specific situation. So somebody says, I need a system that will allow me to register, new customers and to allow them to pick what services they want to buy from me. So in that type of scenario, the IT organization is now saying, okay, I'm going to develop an application that is specific to that problem. Right now, what I need to do for tomorrow morning. The difference here is that when I'm doing this from more of a needs assessment over time, I'm not going to look at a specific situation. I'm going to look at, okay, what needs to be done in general to support the way the organization does business. So instead of just reacting to one situation at a time, I'm creating services that might be able to be used in many different situations. So I might build, 20 business services that are fundamental to many different business situations based on how I do business, or the type of business I'm in. That way, when a new business situation comes up, I'm not always behind the eight ball rushing to just answer that specific need, but I now am creating services that can apply to a lot of different situations.
And one of your 10 SOA no-nos is don't think you're so special. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, a lot of companies, if you look at how business is done, many companies, for example, have to process an order. Now, you may think that you're very special in the way you process orders. Maybe you do more hand-holding with customers, maybe you give them more choices, but the reality is an order is an order is an order. So being able to say, you know, there are some fundamental ways and fundamental processes that go into processing any order on the planet, you know, you're much better off leveraging existing approaches and existing services than thinking you've got to write that from scratch every single time. So if you can look at ways to learn from other people's best practices or from your own best practices and spend your time and effort on things that really do make you unique, then that's how you get competitive advantage.
Interestingly, over the past year, I ran into somebody who I assume spends a lot of his time making price calculators, and it seemed anathema to him that you would make the price calculator a module or component and that the entire application wasn't wholly wrapped up with the price calculator. I find that sometimes throws people that, oh, I'm just doing part of what the business requires. Do you run into a lot of that?
Well, I think in many cases, people that have grown up in sort of the old way of thinking, you know, do have trouble sort of adjusting to a new, more modular approach. You know, it comes down to I am not a manufacturer, and I'm an artist. And part of this, you know, half of the issue with SOA has nothing to do with technology, but it has to do with culture and changing the culture and changing the way people think about technology as a business enabler and not an end unto itself. If we go back to your example of the person who's doing pricing calculators, if that individual is able to take their knowledge of doing the best way to do pricing calculators in the world and they can apply that in many different business situations, that, you know, their knowledge and their expertise can be even more valuable to the company because they can now apply that expertise instead of just to one department, maybe to 20 different departments and to 40 different partners. So I think, you know, some of this is really cultural and not a technology issue at all.
You warn not to make this just an IT initiative, but how involved can we expect the business side of the house to be in SOA development?
I actually think that once the business side truly understands what a business service is, this is a natural way they think. So let me give you an example. Let's say you have a company that decides that they need a new division. So they set up the new division, and they will leverage the existing HR department to hire new people for that department. They don't go out and say, gee, this is a brand new department. Let me start a brand new human resources department for scratch just for this division of my company. That would be sort of a silly waste of resources. But in IT, we sort of act like that. I'm doing a new application, so let me start from scratch. I won't leverage any knowledge from a different division. So the business folks really think this way already. They think about shared services. No one would imagine starting a brand new accounting department to support a new division of company. They have expertise in accounting in that centralized accounting division. They're going to use that. They're not going to start from scratch. So it really is a natural way that businesses think. So getting them on board, getting the IT folks and the business folks to think about business services, what is a good service, that we can use to improve our business, it becomes a great way to increase the collaboration, because now the business and the IT are using the same terminology. They're talking the same language, which isn't always true between business and IT.
And what's the easiest thing to get wrong with SOA? What are people going to screw up that they may not realize?
Well, it's a couple of different things. They might start trying to do a massive project at the first time, and that way they can get themselves into trouble because the business will sit there and be waiting for some results and they'll say, well, this is a five-year effort. That's not a good thing to do. The other thing that people can sometimes do is they try to only code web services interfaces and never really address the business problem they're trying to solve. They don't take a step back and do that assessment of what they already have and what the valuable assets that they can turn into services. So it's either or too small.
And actually, you just touched on one of my favorites there, the I've got a lot of web services, I must have an SOA. Just to clarify for the folks listening at home, that's not the case, is it?
No. A lot of people will think that creating those interfaces are indeed what SOA is about. And SOA is a lot bigger than that. It really is both about business practices. It's about turning services into reusable capabilities that can really support the transition of a company into a much more responsible organization that really can use IT as a competitive weapon. I mean, that sounds like a cliche, and it probably is, but IT, if it is done as very sophisticated services that can be used in a lot of situations, can be a lot more responsive and do things a lot faster than they could if each situation is looked at as though it's an entire world with nothing to do with anything else that's happening in the company.
Judith, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
And once again, Judith is the co-author of Service-Oriented Architecture for Dummies, which is on the bookshelves right now, so you can go out and get yourself a copy. I personally read it and recommend it. It certainly helped this dummy get a little smarter on the subject. Thank you again, Judith.
My pleasure.